Welcome to another installment of Voices of the Middle East. This is Gudar Zaktadari, your host. Tonight, we, as usual, have a pretty full program. I will start with an interview with a representative of the Kurdish government to the U.S. And this is Nejar Shemdin, who I'm talking to from Washington, D.C. And the questions are basically regarding the Kurdish achievements after the invasion of Iraq and especially after the elections, and we will get a feel of how things are moving in Iraq right now. And we will be talking to Nejar about the realities of situation there, considering the coalitions building that they are involved with, and the other issues that Iraqi government is now facing. Welcome to the program, Mr. Shemdin.
Thank you for asking me and for having me.
You're welcome. Could you please just start with a primer about the Kurdish population of Iraq and the totally Kurdish question, as it being labeled, or it used to be labeled in the past, and then I will continue asking some question about the present situation. Give us just a background about the history of Kurds in northern Iraq and in that region in the Middle East, basically in Iran, in Turkey, in Syria. What is the population? How are they being located?
In general, what I can say as a primer to this program, that Kurds are the people who live in Kurdistan. Kurdistan is the land where the indigenous Kurds have lived for many, many years, for thousands of years, predominantly in that area. And that area is today politically divided between Iran, Iraq, Syria, and Iran, Iraq, Turkey, Syria, and some live also in the Soviet Union. The population, there are estimates because of political reasons. There aren't any official census taken in these countries, but the estimate is that there are anywhere between 30 to 40 million Kurds. Now, and that area, as I said, politically divided between these countries. The Kurds that live in Iraq, they made up of something like 6 million people. And the northern part of Iraq is called Iraqi Kurdistan. Now, Iraqi Kurdistan has two areas. One area which is immediately administered, and it has its own government and autonomy. It is run by the Kurdistan Regional Government, and there are 3.8 million people living in there. And that area makes up about 40% of Iraqi Kurdistan, okay? That's the area when the Iraqi regime unilaterally withdrew from area and allowed us to be on our own. We took the challenge and we started our own administration. We also, this is in 1993, we ran elections and we formed our parliament, and the parliament named a prime minister who formed a cabinet accountable to the parliament. And we've been on our own for all these years until until Iraq was liberated and the rest of Kurdistan, well, of Iraq, was also liberated. Now, of course, the area that is under question, that is populated majority by Kurds, is Kirkuk, Zamar, Khanaqin, Tel Afar, some areas of the governorate of Wasat, Diyala, they call it. So this, in general, is what's going on. And then after the liberation and the forming of the governing council in Iraq, there was a lot of deliberations about the transitional administrative law, they call it the TAL, which for the first time in 34 years instilled the rights of all the Iraqis, including the rights of the Kurds, and also it's built in it Article 63C, which gives a minimum of 3 governorates the right to, including the Kurdish governors, the rights to veto any articles in a new constitution that they don't like. And then what is also important with regards to the governorate of Kirkuk and the city of Kirkuk, Article 58, is that there has to be what they call normalization of the situation. We have a problem of property ownership. The previous regime came and wanted to change the ethnic mix of the area, so they kicked out everybody other than Arabs, and they brought in Arabs from the south, and they settled them there by force, and they also, by force, removed Kurds out of there. And these Kurds, for 13 years, they were living in camps that had very, very bad living conditions. And then when Iraq was liberated, these Kurds came back claiming their rightful ownership of their properties. However, the interim government told them to wait and be patient because a committee will be formed, and a committee will look into their claims. Of course, the committee was formed in March 19 March 2000 and 4, but nothing happened at all, and they kept dragging their feet. And these people were squatters sitting in sports stadiums waiting for their fates and their claims to be solved. But when the elections were announced, the last elections, the January 30 elections, there is an independent higher elections committee in Iraq who looks into all the claims, and these people who are originally from Kirkuk and they return to Kirkuk demanded that their votes also be counted, and this independent higher committee did accept their demand and give them the right to vote, and they exercised that vote. I hope I was able to give you an overall picture.
Yes. Can I ask a question briefly?
Certainly.
What is the most significant of Kirkuk at this situation, besides the ethnic people that have been replaced? But it is also important in the sense that it is also a producing oil area of Iraq. Is that correct?
Because it produces oil, and because it produces 40% of the oil of Iraq, the previous regime considered that the Kurds should have no control of that area, although it is predominantly inhabited by Kurds and other ethnic groups also, Turkmens, Assyrians, Chaldeans, also original Arabs who were inhabiting there. But the government of Iraq decided that they will change the ethnographic mix so that non-Kurds will be only in the area, so that Kirkuk, as a producer of natural resources, especially oil, will not be under the Kurds' control.
May I ask, what is the relation between the Kurdistan regional government and the Iraq administration, Iraqi administration that's now in power? Is there an official relation between the KRG?
Certainly. The transitional administrative law, the TAL, did recognize the Kurdistan regional government, which is made up of the Kurdistan parliament, is made up of the Kurdistan cabinet, which is made up of all the laws and also their security forces, as a body that rules that area that's made up of Kurdistanis, mainly Kurds, Arabs, Turkmens, Yazidis, and everybody else. And they are an entity, an autonomous entity within the state of Iraq.
In this election, what was the position of Kurds? I know Kurds had their own list, but also they are part of a broader coalition. Is that correct?
Yes. Well, there were the last elections, there were three elections, actually, that went on. One election was the election for pan-Iraq, all over Iraq. The Kurds participated as one Kurdistani list, United Kurdistani list, that ran in Iraq, and Kurds, wherever they were in Iraq, voted for that list if they wished, you know, and some also voted for other lists. There were, you know, it was free election. And, of course, they won, I think, 77 seats out of 275 seats. They came out the second largest party next to the United Iraqi Alliance Party, which won 140 seats out of 275. Then the second election was the what they call it the regional election for the Kurdistani parliament, and also the two KDP and PUK parties joined in one slate, let's call it. And then they ran in that election along with others, and in that parliament there are 105 seats that the Kurds and the Kurdistanis and the non-Kurds also ran in that election. A third election was election of governors, in that for council of governors, that is local elections, people in cities, people in towns. They elect their own members of the council. For example, the city of Kirkuk was run by appointed people, the council of Kirkuk. There were five, appointed five Kurds, five Arabs, five Turkmens, five Assyrians, and five independents. Now, the outcome of the elections have changed that. The Kurds won 58% of the seats, okay? The Turkmenis, I believe, won something like 23% of the seats. I stand corrected on these numbers, but that's more or less like it. So now there are complaints saying, well, the Kurds won so many seats in the elections is because the independent higher committee for elections allowed Kurds to come into Kirkuk. But actually, it is an independent committee, and their decision is final. They only allow the Kurds to come into Kirkuk because they originally were in Kirkuk, and by force majeure from the previous region, under threat, were forced out of there, and their properties confiscated. So they are rightful owners, and they have a right to cast their votes. I hope I was able to answer your question.
Yeah, Mr. Jamji, could you please stay online? We're going to have a short piece of music to play, and then we'll come back and continue our interview.
Okay. Thank you.
You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM in Portland, Oregon. This is Gudarz Ekhtedari and the Voices of the Middle East. I'm talking to Najjar Shamdan. He is the representative to United States of Kurdish Regional Government. Mr. Shamdan, in the next part of the interview, I would like to ask you some questions that basically, I mean, there are some speculation around and some reports here and there. That one, basically, I don't have anybody more knowledgeable than yourself to ask these questions.
Thank you.
For example, there are some reports, or at least there was a report by Seymour Hersh about some connection or some activities by Israeli intelligence in Kurdistan and through Kurdistan to Iran and to Turkey. What is your comment on that? Is there any truth to that report?
I can only speak for the area that's under the direct administration of the Kurdistan Regional Government. I don't know what happens in Iraqi Kurdistan, in Iranian Kurdistan, or in the Kurdish area in Turkey, in northern Kurdistan. But in our area, we do not have any proof of any Israeli activities there. And the reason is because the United States of America and the allied forces are in control of Iraq. And if there is intelligence, the coalition forces know about everything. So there is no need, as the allegation said, for Israelis to come and set up camps and so forth to try to collect intelligence and information. The other thing is there were rumors also that they were coming in droves and buying properties. We have not seen any evidence in our areas of that either.
Another rumors or speculation is that there are some instigation for Turkmens to, or there are some discussion for Turkmens to claim an autonomous republic south of Kurdistan, but north of Iraq. Is that any truth to that rumor?
There is a mention in the paper that the Turkmens want to establish an autonomous area, not republic, that surrounds the Kurdistan region of Iraq. But that there are no Turkmens that live in a contiguous area. There are some people who speak Turkmani, but they are actually Kurds, like the Shebek, like the people of Erbil. There is no one contiguous area, as was shown in those reports, stretching all the way from the Syrian border to the Iranian border, forming like a belt around the Kurdish area. Now, we believe in democracy. We believe in census. We believe in elections. Every other individual and group in Iraq, these people have the right to go and cast their votes and form whatever entity they form. If they have the results under free elections and democracy. So far, we haven't seen that happen. Well, the last elections that took place in northern Iraq, including the Kurdistan Regional Government, there aren't any numbers that justify such a thing. Now, claims is one thing, and having the people to realize it is another thing. But certainly, we are waiting to see what kind of plans, more details about what they have in mind, and who is behind it.
Well, the source that in these kind of reports is being mentioned is an Israeli think tank who suggested this solution. But I want to continue.
Is solution suggested to solve a situation, or is that just a group actually in northern Iraq who are claiming that?
I believe it, the way I heard it is a recommendation.
If it's a recommendations, there are many, many recommendations. As I said, in a freely democratic elected country, okay, the numbers speak for themselves, you know. And that is the essence of democracy, and that's why we Kurds participated in the elections of Iraq, because we think through that we can all be partners in running Iraq and in sharing Iraq.
From the very beginning of the development in Iraq, the Turkish government was opposing any further autonomous right for the Iraqi Kurdistan.
Yes.
And one of their, excuse were also the discrimination against Turkmens. And also they were totally objecting any annexation or any recognition of Kirkuk as part of Kurdistan. Is that being resolved or still there?
All I can say is quote the leaders of Iraq, including the president, interim president Sheikh Ghazi Liawar, and the prime minister, commenting on these things, that Kirkuk and the issue of Kirkuk, it's a purely Iraqi interior issue. And they do not want any neighboring countries to interfere into Iraqi interior issues, okay? Number one. Number two, where was Turkey when Saddam Hussein was massacring and was killing Turkmenis, and he threw out some 30,000 Turkmenis out of the Kirkuk area? It was the Kurds who rallied to their help and all that. But because Turkey was benefiting from trade with Iraq, they decided not to say anything. Now, all of a sudden, we see Turkey is becoming the defender of the rights of the Turkmens. Turkmens can defend themselves because it's a free country, and they have their representatives in the local the local councils as well as in the parliament. They don't need anybody to talk for them because they are... to begin with, Iraqis. That's where it stands. Did I cover all your questions? Or
yeah. One other question I have is Kurdish?
Excuse me. And this one part. Turkey also have admitted finally. Before they were saying that federalism in Iraq, we are against it because it encourages Kurds to separate. Now they have accepted the principle of federalism in Iraq.
Okay, great. The question I have is, Kurdish Alliance was part of or supporting the candidate from Dr. Shahristani to become the prime minister?
Yes,
that correct?
Yes.
There are some, again, reports in papers that some movements are happening, instigating or trying to take some of the coalition forces out of this, so it opens a space for Mr. Alavi to become the prime minister. How much truth do you see in that?
First of all, as I said, the three main parties that came to the front as a result of the Iraqi elections were the United Iraqi Alliance, that won 140 seats out of 275, which is the United Iraqi Alliance is made up of the Hizbul Dawah, of the Supreme Council for the Islamic Revolution of Iraq, is made of the Iraq National Congress, which is a secular one, and it's made of other independents. Now, all these together decided to run in the elections under one slate, under one banner. Now, of course, the second largest party that won was the Kurdistani United Party, and then the third one was the Iraqis Party, which was Prime Minister, interim Prime Minister Alavi's party. Okay? In order to form the executive of Iraq, which is mainly the presidency and the Presidency Council made up of two vice presidents, and then choosing a prime minister and deputy prime ministers, and then choosing the Speaker of the House, there has to be a lot of behind-the-scenes negotiations in the back rooms, what they call horse trading, okay? The United Iraqi Alliance Party, which has the blessing of His Eminence Ayatollah Sistani, asked Mr. Shahristani at the beginning is to put together this coalition to run in the elections. And then there were four names that were given: Sayyid Adel Abdel Mahdi, the present interim minister of finance, Mr. Shahristani, who is a nuclear physicist, and then there's Dr. Ahmed Chalabi, who is the president of the Iraq National Council, and then Dr. Al Jafari, who is also the head of the Al Dawa Party. Now, after they sort of negotiated themselves, some of these withdrew, okay, from the nominations. Now Jafari is the personality who represents the United Iraqi Alliance. So Jafari has to go, and to in order for him to be accepted as, and they're interested in the position of prime minister. So for them, in order to get two-thirds of the voices of the new, what they call a TNA, the Transitional National Assembly, they have to go and do these backroom negotiations with the Alawi group, with the Kurdish group, with the other independents, and so forth. And so that's why we saw that, and also the interim government, interim prime minister Alawi, also is interested in that position of the prime minister of the new government. So we saw him went to Salah ad-Din and met with the Kurdish leader Masoud Barzani, and after that we saw also Dr. Jafari also went there negotiating about getting their support. Because without their support, there is no way they could by themselves have 180 votes out of 275 votes, which is about 60%, to have him accepted.
Do you expect that either Mr. Talabani or Mr. Barzani become the president, the future president of Iraq?
In the negotiations, of course, it looked like at the outset, the United Iraqi Alliance, the largest party that gained votes in the last elections, that they were not interested in the position of president of Iraq. Okay, and so they said, okay, we don't mind if the Kurds have the, since Iraq is made up of two main nationalities, Kurds and Arabs, and their partners in Iraq, according to the Transitional National, TAL, Transitional Administrative Law. Therefore, we don't mind that a Kurd take the position of the president. In return, you support us if we want to seek the position of prime minister. And this is how it's developing.
My last question, do you expect any change as far as the stability and security in Iraq after the new government comes in power with all these insurgencies and bombings that's going on, and it's being escalated actually after the elections? How do you see that calm down and give the new government any chance to move?
Yes. Well, first of all, I think that democracy has to prevail, and there is no way that a chance to be given to the insurgents, to terrorists, to take over Iraq again, because they already had enough under Saddam Hussein for 34 years. The Kurds will not forget that. The Kurds know that they lost 180,000 people got killed by Saddam Hussein, 3,000 Barzani family were killed. 5,000 people were gassed in Halabja. And as a matter of fact, in 6 days, March 16th, we will be celebrating the 16th anniversary. Since 88 and 2006, the 18th anniversary of Halabja. We will never allow that to return. So, but also the people of Iraq, they went and they voted, and they went out and challenged those terrorists and insurgents with their own voices. Okay, and you saw their purple painted fingers in the pictures everywhere, because they are determined that they have a free country, Iraq, a democratic, pluralistic federal Iraq. The Iraqis more and more are being killed by those terrorists and fanatics, and eventually the Iraqis themselves will fight them. The excuse that they were fighting the Americans and the coalition forces has proven to be a lie, because less and less Americans are being killed and more Iraqis are being killed, and that is not fair. That no religion will accept that.
But I guess there are different opinions as far as the whole situation and whether this was a liberation or this was an invasion. But with American forces in Iraq, I mean, how long do you expect American forces to stay?
Okay, well, first of all, it was an invasion to liberate Iraq, so it was both. How long will they stay? As long as the Iraqis feel they need the Americans to help them to ensure security in the country. There is no timetable set for that, but it is the Iraqis want the Americans and the coalition forces to leave as soon as Iraq is ready to take over 100% of the security item, and the Americans also want to leave. I mean, nobody wants to stay away from their homes forever and be exposed to killing and all that. These young people are giving their lives to Iraq as well as the Iraqis.
Well, we are getting to the end of the time that we have for this interview. I would like to thank you, Najjar Shamdan, for being with us tonight, and hopefully we can talk again in the future. And I guess ahead of time, I would like to congratulate Nowruz.
Thank you very much. I can congratulate all your audience and listeners also for Nowruz. And every year, inshallah, we will celebrate more freedom and more democracy. And it was an honor to participate in your program.
Thank you very much. For the audience who are listening, Nowruz is the New Year's that is being celebrated in Kurdistan and all over the Turkish Kurdistan, Iraqi and Iranian Kurdistan, as well as the whole Iran and Afghanistan and Tajikistan.
Right. Happy Nowruz.
Happy Nowruz. Thank you.
Bye-bye.